if you want to spread DNC propaganda, you should absolutely get paid to spread DNC propaganda. Why are you doing it for free?
They want us to see the dragging leg, right? The stank leg.
I know people are saying that's a conspiracy theory, but that's one I'm totally on board with.
So, I wasn't insinuating that.
You were absolutely insinuating that. You're saying, why would this be attractive to men, right? You would want more attractive women if you want to bring in
young
men.
I was talking about the tone of her voice, okay. James. Hello.
Hello. So,
are we ready to start talking about whether or not Trump is dead? No, we know he's not. He's talking about somebody getting savagely mugged in DC. We have an amazing show, but I just want to say I'm so happy to be back in the studio with you face to face.
Yeah. I don't know if people noticed last week. I was in the studio. You were not.
No, I was not. I was remote, but there's just something better about being in person. Speaking about being in person, I don't know that Trump was this weekend of Labor Day weekend. There had been rumors circulating that he might have been dead. So we're going to get into all of that today. We're going to talk about some Epstein leaked emails.
We're going to go into the Minnesota shooting, right? You're saying, hey, there's some possible CIA connections, influencer dark money drama with Taylor Lorenz and the rest of the DNC sycophants.
Yes, the comedians getting paid off to do a show in Saudi Arabia.
Hell yeah.
Sex recession and my favorite person, Greta.
She's going to Gaza.
Yeah. So we're going to get into all of that today. We're super excited. It's going to be a great show. Lots to talk about.
Yeah. So first off, we just saw the press conference. Trump looks to be alive.
Yes. The real Trump looks to be alive. So what has been happening over really the last couple of months is there has been in the news that there is some health scares with President Trump, right? It was like he has a vein disorder, but don't worry. And everybody's like, oh, he's showing his age. Then there was that bruise on his hand. And then he didn't speak to the press for 3 days before Labor Day. And surprisingly, liberals started a conspiracy theory that Republicans did during Biden's administration that Trump was dead and that there was a clone robot body double in place of him. And, you know, I just don't take sides when it comes to a conspiracy theory. So, of course, I looked into this and I was waiting to see him just like everybody else over Labor Day weekend. Charlie Kirk and all of the MAGA social media puppets came out and said, he's alive, ha ha, liberal tears. But when you zoom into these photos, we do know he's alive now, but this looks like a body double. So this is a picture of President Trump. It was originally him getting out of the car and it was very blurry, but.
And you're saying this is a body double right here?
I let me just say this to you. Does this look like President Trump to you?
He looks ill. He looks like there's something going on with his jaws or something like that, right? It looks not right.
What about that dent over the forehead?
Oh.
There's literally
a crease. Is that just the hat? Is that the hat just pushing it down?
Look, to me, the eyes don't look the same. The nose don't look the same. Nothing looks the same. I posted this story and Republicans are mad at me because they're saying, how dare you deliver this fake news? But you have to just look at the facts and the pictures. And if it looked like President Trump, I'd say, oh, he's back. Hallelujah.
Well, what I found weird was that he did no press conferences for 6 days up until today.
And came out looking like this.
Right? Because usually he loves to talk to the press. But
loves.
Now he's keeping the press away. Even because he said he was on his way to the golf course, or the White House said he was on his way to the golf course. But then there's no evidence of him playing golf because the press was kept away from the golf course.
Well, Charlie Kirk posted a picture of him playing golf and said, you guys thought that he was dead. Ha ha. He's playing with, you know, a Super Bowl hero or this and that. But that wasn't the only picture that was posted of him coming out. There's this mirror pic on the very bottom there, 16C. And the White House posted this picture. His accounts posted this picture. And the problem with it is that the internet realized that this photo was doctored in some way because you see the mirror in the background. It's not reflecting who's actually on the staircase. And so people are saying they did something to this photo. Now, whether or not they did something to Trump, that's also kind of a, I don't know.
His smile looks a little different in that photo. Right,
like we got some veneered Trumps here going on. So it's just kind of weird considering last year, if you pull up 2G, there's a picture where Joe Biden's chin is literally melting off. There it is on the bottom. And it looks similar to the forehead crease for Trump. I just find it odd that the media started reporting on his health. He's declining. Then he disappears. And right before he disappears, J.D. Vance comes out and says, I just want to let everybody know that I am prepared to assume the responsibility of presidency if Trump falls gravely ill.
And why would he say that?
Well, I don't know, because that's literally the description of his job.
Right, but was he asked, hey, are you ready to go? Because I don't know if this is the media trying to push something to say, hey, JD, are you ready to go? Of course he's going to say he's ready to go. Or better, he probably should have just said, hey, Trump's the president right now. Like, why are we talking about this?
It's very weird that he's dropping these little Easter eggs.
Yeah. Is this, does your celebrity blind have some sort of...
So what's really weird is that 3 weeks ago, a celebrity blind's website, Crazy Days and Nights, posted this. And when you read these, they reveal who each title is, so you know over time. So the CEO who knows everything about everyone and will control the world one day.
Is that Peter Thiel?
Peter Thiel told the celebrity CEO, that's Elon Musk, that the second in charge, J.D. Vance, will soon be the president of the United States, A++ lister. So I read this and I'm like, huh, interesting. Screenshot, put it in my back pocket. And then all of this information now is coming out. Now, to me, there's no doubt that that was a body double. We know Trump is alive now. We just saw him do a press conference.
And okay, before we get on to the body double, I do want to play C2, right? Because these things, because people will say, okay, you don't know what you're talking about. Body doubles, do they even exist? Let's just play this video, because it does seem like this technology is pretty advanced. This is C3.
Yes.
Looks pretty, I mean, it looks better than I imagined it could look.
Out here in the fields,
yeah,
I fight for my meals.
Okay, so.
I mean, look, this is a great video, and you also have.
And that's why he can't speak. That's why. Right. He can't give a press conference because it's really hard to do the voice and the mannerisms appropriately. You can have a guy walking around.
That looks like him.
But it's really hard to do the Trumpisms.
Right. And I'm sure you've seen the clip with the former CIA chief of disguise, Jonah Mendez. And she talks about how she fooled Ronald Reagan in the Oval Office. She's talked about this. It's been kind of everywhere now. And she says, like, the one thing you really can't do in these masks is laugh, which I feel like Trump kind of does a lot because he's a little bit of a comedian up there. And obviously the movement when you talk, like you were just saying. So.
And the voice.
And the voice.
So, yeah, there's definitely something going on. I mean, this isn't the first time the White House, not just this White House, any White House lies about the president's condition, right? It's done under every single president. They lie about the president's condition to make him seem like he's doing good, which is fine to do because you want to project power to other countries as well, right? Back in the 60s, they were covering for JFK's illness. And then obviously FDR, people didn't even know he was in a wheelchair for most of the time. And so this is not anything new. I'm not saying this is bad. I mean, I'm not saying this is new, but this is not good.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you have two situations here. Either the deep state is going to kill President Trump or get rid of him. He's gone into the shadows, whatever. He's got a health condition. J.D. Vance needs to step in because they have used him to his full ability. He's done what they wanted. They got that big, beautiful bill passed. They got that AI legislation through. Peter Thiel wants this, you know, dystopian surveillance state. J.D. Vance is the perfect person to come in and just boom, really shove it down our throats and get it done. Or you have a situation where maybe he's not ill, and we know that different administrations around the world use body doubles because they don't want people to get assassinated, whatever it may be. Like, that could be an issue, too, where, like, you know, maybe assassination threats were super high and they just didn't want him out and about.
Well, I think that he's alive. We saw the press conference today. He's sort of alive. Back to his regular self. But I do think he has been dealing with health issues. And I want to go through some of this thread of actual medical information saying that Trump has been dealing with what they call TIA strokes. Apparently those are mini strokes. And here's what they're citing. So some of the stuff that they're talking about is that Trump has been showing this like notable kind of dragging of the right leg, which apparently is a sign of a, like people with issues that are stroke related, right? This is a video where it's not really that noticeable, but they're saying, okay, yeah, his right leg, he's kind of dragging it. And then they're talking about the bruise in the hand, right? And then they're also talking about how the medications he's taken is potentially a sign that he has been dealing with this issue. So they're citing they're citing medications like, I've never heard of this, but Rosuvastatin. Oh my God. Rosuvastatin oh my God. This is, I should probably not even attempt to read these. Azitamibe.
Sounds like a disease you could get from a new mosquito, one of Bill Gates' mosquitoes. Oh no, I got bit. I have azitamibe.
Azitamibe and daily aspirin. And so these are taken, I guess, to manage various health issues. So I think there's something to it that like something happened to him last week that he's taken a week to recover from, right? They're citing like the cankle issues that he has, right?
Ankle issues.
Right? Have you seen the pictures with him, like his ankles are like...
I don't think he ever had ankles. Like, I don't know. Out of all the things, he appears as though he has trunks, right? Like, there's no
huge
thinning at the ankles.
And then he can't walk straight. There's a video of him not being able to walk straight.
Getting off the plane, yeah.
Right? I guess that is another sign of TIA, right? Having these kinds of face drooping, which... You say it's a mask. Other people with more sort of medical perspective say it's due to a stroke, face drooping. Leg dragging, trouble walking in a straight line. So I'm just trying to balance out. Yeah, maybe there's a body double over the weekend, or maybe he's just actually recovering from a legitimate stroke.
Yeah, he could be. Absolutely. There's a lot of different scenarios here. At the end of the day, it doesn't surprise me that he's on medication. He's almost 80 years old. Right? Same with Biden. This is exactly why we need to have age restrictions for the president of the United States. We should not be talking about, is he wearing a mask? Is it a body double? Or did he have mini strokes? Like, they should be younger candidates. But I do find it odd that the last administration tirelessly spent all of their time hiding President Joe Biden's cognitive decline.
Yeah.
And now with Trump, it's like you can't even match the cover up right on his hand for the bruise. And that leads me to believe they want us to see this decline. They want us to see the dragging leg, right? The stank leg is being dragged from behind. They want us to see the bruise. They want us to see this crease. Otherwise, you know, Biden spent what, 200 days on the beach in Delaware? Just say, hey, he's taken a week with the family. He's been, you know, running around for 8 months, 24/7, he's taken 8 days. Like, I think it's weird that they would put this out there.
Well, no, because you have to put something out there. You can't just put nothing out there and say he's away with his family because people are going to go crazy online and say, oh, he died. He's definitely dead.
Right, they'd go crazy and then they'd come back today on Tuesday and they'd see the press conference and they wouldn't have the leg and the mask and the mirror and all these other things. It makes it worse.
Well, sometimes I think people who try to cover stuff up just make things worse, which is kind of what's happening right now, I think, with the Epstein emails, right? Yeah. They're trying to cover up and say there's no list, and now more and more things are getting exposed. This is a new trove of leaks coming out with Epstein and his conversation with Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel, as well as getting Peter Thiel involved in those conversation, which we want to say, we covered that in episode one. We were all over that.
I'm sorry. We were actually first in saying that Peter Thiel is the new Epstein. And people are like, that's a reach. That's a reach. And now everybody's doing it.
Yeah. So. Let's play C4 here.
Epstein's emails with former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak are being made public for the first time, and they're generally just about how the two of them wanted to start surveillance companies together, how Epstein was organizing meetings between Barak and people like Peter Thiel, the owner of Palantir, a surveillance company that is increasingly involving itself with American and other Western governments. And you also have some really crazy ones like this, where Epstein says, with civil unrest exploding in Ukraine, Syria, Somalia, Libya, and the desperation of those in power, isn't this perfect for you? And there's also this one where Epstein says, Wevi Chines looking for to start personal protection company in Beijing. Kidnapping has begun. These were released to the public by hackers. They are confirmed to be 100% real. And if you want to read a full article about it, check out Matthew Petty's article. But you can also check out TruAnon on Twitter, who are about to do an episode about this. And I think many people thought that this was going to be about how Epstein was blackmailing Israelis. But in many ways, it's more horrifying, because what it actually is about how Epstein, after being convicted of heinous crimes, was basically using his position and his social connections to invest in mass surveillance companies that are increasingly going to dominate Western society.
So, I mean, here's what I think is going on with this Epstein situation. It seems like he maybe is not the spy master, right? We've always said he's just a cog in this entire machine. He's like a controlled asset, right? He has these sexual proclivities that leaves him vulnerable. So then his loyalty is basically guaranteed. And his job is to like kind of make it so that, this is my assessment of things, is that to tie the US and Israel together with all of this like data and surveillance, right? This data mining situation, right? Where they're going in, they're getting real-time insights into American citizens with all of these companies that we've talked about before, like, for example, Carbon in our first episode. And now, all of a sudden, they're not just looking into the U.S.'s infrastructure and stuff that's going on. We are now, like, dependent on them for this technology to make things happen, right? We can't actually function now without these tools. And so at the same time, they're getting all this compromat, meaning all this blackmail material that they could potentially use. And then on the other hand, we now need them, because without this technology, the law enforcement can't function, and we're having all these situations with mass shootings and stuff like that, so we're creating a need for it. And then the whole goal of this, in my opinion, is to create this kind of like symbiotic relationship between us and Israel, because they need us to survive, and then now they have basically full ability to steer foreign policy in the Middle East.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I just, for the people that didn't watch episode one, will you re-explain to everybody what Carbon is? Because I think that's just, most people don't even know about that.
Carbon, basically it's a 24/7 surveillance for law enforcement to go in and listen to your phone calls. They would have access to your phone camera and your microphone in, obviously they say, emergency situations, but they're always being monitored. So this is technology that's coming over from Israel that is Peter Thiel investment, Ehud Barak, former prime minister of Israel, as well as Jeffrey Epstein.
And these emails are from how long ago?
These emails are from 2014, I think.
I mean, and it just goes to show that Peter Thiel has been in this circle for a long time. You know, he did that interview with Joe Rogan where he tried to like dance around it. Oh, I heard he was like a great tax guy, but like we didn't do anything. And then Wall Street Journal posted that, oh no, actually Jeffrey invested in your companies. And now we know the relationship goes back even further than that.
And he
that.
Was trying to deny that. Yes. Well, he was trying to downplay that on Rogan. He's like, oh, maybe I had like an email or a meeting here and there.
Yes.
But it seemed like, No. They're intimately involved in all of these projects that are like early stage, you know, Palantir type of stuff when it was still just getting off the ground.
Yeah. And so that kind of leads us back to what we were just talking about with Trump. If there is some sort of a conspiracy to get JD in, because remember, JD was the never Trump guy.
That is so interesting, right? I've seen clips recently where JD's like, oh yeah, Trump sucks. Like, we shouldn't believe anything he says. And then all of a sudden, he's the VP pick.
And also, it is weird that he has changed his name 3 times. People don't realize that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was talking to ChatGPT. We have a love-hate relationship. Sometimes she lies. Sometimes she tells the truth. But I was asking her if this is something that, like, an FBI profiler would expect of a spy or, you know, somebody who is entrenched in this type of.
Yeah.
And yes, like, why would a regular person change their name 3 times? It's not just because they think it sounds better. I don't know. Maybe it is because they think it sounds better, or they're trying to hide their past, or.
Well, it seems like everything about him has been somewhat fabricated
and disingenuous.
Yeah, like he's like, oh, he grew up very, very poor, but then you find out, oh, well, his grandparents were actually pretty well off, and then so he never was in that position of poverty that he described.
Right, the Hillbilly Elegy movie accurately describing that he needed a T1 calculator and grandma had to go sell her shoes to buy it.
I don't think that's true.
You know what I mean?
Like, and then he went to Yale, which normal people, or not normal people, but like
but it would
people
just
in poverty
make sense.
Don't go to Yale.
That if Peter Thiel is involved with these different governments, the United States and Israel, and they both want a surveillance state, which that is basically, you know, we can say that that's the case.
Yeah.
If they want that, what better person than J.D. Vance, Peter Thiel's mentee, to voop, go in. Oh, Trump's old. We knew he's old. He's done a great job. But now all of a sudden, his left arm goes out. He got a stroke. And then JD, I'm coming in, you know, straight from the army. And he comes in and he saves the day. And, you know, overall approval ratings for JD are actually high. People aren't really talking about that he's a Palantir plant or that he has changed his name 3 times or he might be disingenuous. So majority of the country thinks, oh, JD would be great if this happened.
Yeah, no, there's definitely something shady going on. And this is like a multi-decade plan in the works, right, to install this, to make sure that, hey, if people want to speak up about certain issues, maybe in the Middle East, foreign policy stuff, oh, now it's not so easy to do so without risking my own exposure to whatever they found on my device, you know, listening to it for a decade with all this surveillance technology. And now they've basically ensured our loyalty to whatever they want to do in the Middle East. I think that's, I know people are saying that's a conspiracy theory, but that's one I'm totally on board with.
I mean, it makes sense when you connect the dots, and it's not like they're, look at those dots are probably easier to connect than Trump was a body double this weekend. So, I mean,
and there's all this stuff where people are, this is actual conspiracy, right? Because we are seeing a rise in these kinds of like mass shootings and violent events to then justify possibly the installation of all of these.
Right. Well, I talked about this a little bit with the Minneapolis shooting, which I just want to say, you know, no matter if there's somebody behind it, if it was just an individual act, it's horrific, it's evil. There is nothing worse that I can think of than kids dying because of a shooting. I just think it's so sad in a school where they're supposed to feel safe and they were praying. Like, it's just, it's horrific. There's just no other way to put it. That being said, I am going to look at the different parts of this shooting because it always seems to be, I don't know how it always is, a trans shooter with a manifesto and one connection away from the CIA. To me—
Well, I don't know about the, I don't know if there are that many trans shooters.
I find—
This one is, but I don't know if there's that many of them.
Well, they just, this is a common theme. You know, with there's been enough in the last 5 years where you go, really? Again? I don't know. I kind of feel like that's strange. And I'm actually like sticking up for the trans community because there's a lot of people saying like, they're weird. They're this. This is what's, you know, this is what's what they do. And I just think that that's actually unfair. But anyways, the dad of this shooter, if we want to pull this up, his name is James Westman, and he's a senior applications developer at ESRI. This is one of the largest mapping data surveillance companies in the United States, and they contract with the CIA for many things. Now, one of the things that they have contracted with the CIA with is, if you pull up the next element, 5D, emergency response mapping with indoor GIS for K through 12 schools. So this guy has been with this company for 29 years, and his job basically is to make sure that these programs roll out effectively. Now, in Minneapolis, the state agreed to pay $7 million to this company to roll out this emergency response mapping for all of their public schools, which is just interesting because the shooting happened at a private school where the guy who's in charge of this program rollout, son went, his wife taught at, and then he shot up the schools. And it makes me wonder, is this possibly an event to now push private schools that are kind of supposed to be away from the indoctrination of the public schools, away from maybe the surveillance, to say, hey, you really need this technology too, so that everybody's kind of under that CIA surveillance umbrella?
That's what I'm saying, is all of this, like it is to me, like the way I see it is, this is just like taking advantage of a situation that is happening. They've wanted this technology to be installed, so they're finding all kinds of different justifications to do so. I know some people are saying, no, these are planted people. Like, you know, you're not, I don't know if you're saying that, but you did make a video saying that kind of, but
I just think it's strange,
but it's the connections are somewhat strange. But to me, this is like just kind of similar to what's happening in LA, where they're taking advantage of a disaster, a very unfortunate situation, a tragedy, and then they're pushing their agenda.
And what are you referring to in LA? The fires?
Yeah, the fires. So some people are saying, hey, those fires are deliberately started. I think, no, that's probably due to negligence. And now that it's happened, let's take advantage of it.
Yeah. And look, I have no idea what's going on, but when these stories come out and when these things happen, I think that it's our responsibility doing the news to not just report, hey, a shooting happened, and repeat everything that Fox and CNN and everything's going to say. I'm going to look at the gun and say, that's odd that it said sponsored by BlackRock. I think that's very odd considering the last shooter, Crooks, was in a BlackRock commercial. People are saying he was transitioning. There's just all of these weird similarities. And, you know, then people go down the rabbit hole of, are these people MK Ultra? Are these people under some sort of a CIA operation where they are being mind altered to carry out these heinous acts for the agenda of a surveillance state, which aligns with what the WEF wants, what the global elites want. And yes, that is going down a rabbit hole, but the more that these things happen and it aligns with their agenda, you can't just ignore it either. You have to say, yes, I know this is a conspiracy theory, but I just want to point this out.
Yeah, 100%. Because I'm with you there, because I was recently talking to a journalist from the Washington Post, and they're asking me, hey, you know, do you fact check? Like, what kind of stuff do you do to make sure the information that you give is accurate? And I'm telling them, hey, there are some things that are obvious things that's not being reported by mainstream media that are facts, but they're not being reported because it's inconvenient. The narrative doesn't really align with what they're trying to push, so they don't talk about it. And it's my job to go there and say, hey, I don't know exactly what this means, but there seems to be a connection here. And so people should be aware of it, because I don't have any kind of corporate agenda. I'm not being paid by the DNC, which we'll talk about later. I'm not being paid by the RNC. I'm not being paid by any kind of corporation to make sure I toe the line in different directions. I'm here to just to find information out that I find interesting and then relay that to the public. And then for you, you're like, hey, this gun says what, sponsored by BlackRock. Nobody's talking about it, but what does this mean?
Right. And I mean, when you look at conspiracy theories, you know, 20 years ago, people were saying they're cloud seeding, they're making it rain. And people would say that person needs to be committed, right? They're crazy. No one is flying a plane and manipulating the weather. And now, like, everybody talks about it.
Well, you can't talk about it on TikTok, I believe.
Please.
Right?
I just got a strike before we started filming.
Right? Cloud seeding is like a key word that's not allowed?
Well, cloud seeding is 50-50, but chemtrail is a no. So anyways, it's just, you know, it's just some of these things. Even if we look at 5 years ago, right, the idea that the NIH could have funded
COVID.
research in a lab in Wuhan and that COVID could be a bioweapon. People were like, people are insane.
Yeah.
You know, and now people are kind of like, well, kind of looks like that's what happened.
That's exactly what happened. There's actually a paper trail of like money flowing over there. And that was discovered very early in 2020. And it was shut down immediately, saying that it was a right-wing racist conspiracy theory.
How is it racist? Because it was
a Chinese. Exactly.
I mean, look, it was, you know.
And I say, I don't give a fuck. These guys are starting.
Right. No, I just want to bring up that point because sometimes I get it. The things I say seem crazy. And a lot of the times I'm wrong. But every once in a while I hit and I go, I told you so.
And that's the same with mainstream media. That's the point that I stress as well, is that mainstream media is wrong all the time, especially in breaking news reporting.
Mm.
And then they go back and, or they don't go back a lot of times to correct any of that shit. They just report, or they take information that they know is wrong. They take it from some credible source, like some Israeli general, and say, oh, yeah. You know,
yeah,
we did not do this. And then 3 weeks later in an investigation, they're like, yeah, we actually did do that.
Right.
So then what we're trying to do is open up more sourcing, right? It's like, hey, this person seems like they're onto something. Like, for example, when we cited the Trump stuff, right? It's like, hey, these sources are talking about how maybe he has a stroke or maybe he's wearing a mask. We should look into that versus just taking it from like Caroline Leavitt, say, nope, Trump is very healthy.
Right.
And it's all good.
His forehead looks like silly putty because, you know, it was raining today. Like, yeah. It's ridiculous. But talking about credible sources, you know, it is no secret that people are getting their information from creators like us and alternative news sources. And you did a story on Democratic liberal influencers taking dark money. And I think that's important because you always need to follow the money.
Always,
right?
Always. So it's not, by the way, it's not my story. It's Taylor Lorenz reporting. And let's take a look because she breaks down the allegations in her article in this video.
Liberal dark money group is secretly funding some of the biggest Democratic influencers on the internet. After the Democrats lost last November, the party faced a reckoning. It was clear that they had failed to successfully navigate the new media landscape. While Republicans have spent decades building a powerful independent media ecosystem, the Democrats have largely relied on outdated strategies and traditional media. But last month, a covert new program aimed at bolstering Democratic support on the internet began rolling out. The 1630 Fund, a dark money group, is working with Chorus, a liberal influencer collective, to secretly pay pro-Democrat online influencers up to $8,000 a month.
I like $8,000.
The influencers have to attend regular messaging check-ins, but the program is being run in secret. According to contracts viewed by Wired, the influencers would be kicked out for even speaking about it. Influencers included in communication and an onboarding session for those receiving payment from the 1630 Fund include Olivia Juliana, the centrist Gen Z influencer who spoke at the DNC last summer, Barrett Adair, a content creator who runs an American Girl doll-themed pro-DNC meme account, Suzanne Lambert, who has called herself a Regina George liberal, Aaron Parnas, who has been called the Gen Z Walter Cronkite, and dozens of others. The whole thing raises questions about independent media funding, non-disclosures on political content, and standards surrounding ethics and transparency in the content creator industry. Head over to Wired to read my full story.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie. This morning, Aaron posted a video on TikTok, and I paused it 10 seconds in and just wrote, bought and paid for.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which he absolutely is. And here's the situation here. It's not a surprise. Right. If you listen to those the messages that these people are putting out, it 100% aligns with Democrat messaging. And they also don't talk about the inconvenient stuff. For example, how Biden was very much a supporter of the Israeli, you know, actions, the genocide in Gaza. They don't really talk about that too much. And so this is not a surprise at all. But these guys don't want to admit it for some reason. None of these guys, I mean, the backlash, because I think this story would have been dead within 2 days if they just would have said, yeah, of course, we're taking DNC money. RNC takes money. We're going to take money. We're going to try to fight fire with fire.
Yeah.
Boom. And then that story would have been over. But now they're coming out and finding all kinds of justifications of why this is different and how we're not being paid for specific messaging. They just want to help creators get their feet off the ground. This is not...
No one's money. Trying to help us get our feet off the ground. Well, we've had a couple, but I'm just saying in general, you know, they're doing it because they want their agenda pushed.
Right, but they don't want to admit that they're the same. That's because the argument that, you know, when we talked to Butch Weir, right?
Mm-hmm.
The hard truth is that both of these parties, they function more or less the same way.
Yeah, 100%.
In many ways. But for some
they
reason...
They both have body doubles.
now that's also true. But they, in general, they both play the kind of same dark money game. But the problem is one side likes to be thought of as like virtuous and nice, whereas I think more of the conservatives, the Republicans, they're more honest about like, yeah, we don't really like immigrants here, you know, too much. And the other side is like, no, we need to protect everybody and this and that. And then you find out, oh, well, Obama was deporting a ton of people during that time, but you guys didn't want to talk about it. So they have a hard time admitting this. And I do want to play this because I think this response is hilarious. Can you play, let's see here, D6, but like 2x speed, because I don't want to listen to this for 6 minutes.
Because it's just sort of frustrating. Everyone is willing to just believe lies.
The article that Taylor Lorenz wrote about me and a number of other content creators who are part of the Chorus cohort is filled with factual inaccuracies. First and foremost, we are not paid to make content. We are not paid by the Democratic Party. Chorus does not have any creative control over any of the content that I make, over any of the people that I talk to. And they have never and will never tell me what I can or cannot say. The contract that we signed does not pay us for content. It is the same as somebody giving seed money to a small business to build their infrastructure so that...
Wait, pause real quick. This doesn't even make any sense because... It completely goes against like the actual contract itself. They are told like, hey, this is the messaging of the day and this is what we want you to talk about. Maybe they don't explicitly say you must say this, but they definitely give you the talking points.
Of course.
And they and other creators have shown, we have meetings every morning and this is like what they identified as the agenda of the day. Mm-hmm. So maybe they don't say, hey, you must 100% talk about every single one of these things. They definitely just give you the talking points and then you probably already aligned to them. Oh, I'll just say it. And then this VC analogy doesn't make any sense either because the reason why VCs give money to an entrepreneur is that they're going to get a return later on, right? They're investing money. So right now, why would anybody give them $8,000 just to get their feet off the ground?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. Oh, no, it doesn't make any sense because they want to buy their loyalty. That's what they're doing. They're saying, hey, we're going to get you started, but you kind of owe us going forward. We've kind of bought your loyalty. So maybe you don't have that exchange of money going back the other direction, but they're certainly buying you for your influence. So I don't know what this lady is going on about.
This lady, Olivia, I just had to like fact check myself to make sure it was the same person. Didn't think I was wrong, but I don't know if you remember in May, the Democrats were saying that she is going to be the one to recruit young men to the Democratic Party. Do you remember that?
I didn't remember that, but that's I'm just reacting.
It's everywhere.
I don't want to be mean to her, but like in a way, you know, of what she looks like. But there has been some.
I wasn't insinuating.
You were absolutely insinuating that. You're
not
saying
at all.
Why would this be attractive to men? Right? You would want more attractive women if you want to bring in
young
men.
I was talking about the tone of her voice, James. You really jumped way ahead of me there.
Okay.
But look, this isn't the first time that this stuff has been done. In the 2024 elections, obviously, I live on TikTok, especially during that time, and you have the boy band of DNC influencers, the Harry Sisson, who's now kind of been canceled because of his sexual text messages.
I don't think Harry's canceled. I think he's still
or whatever his name is, and Dean. And it came out during the election that they were all being paid by Palette Management. And the DNC, you could see the money trail. The DNC would give $200,000 to Palette Management, and then Palette Management would disperse the money. And there was a money trail going to Harry Sisson and these people. And this exploded online. And Harry Sisson did the same thing that Olivia did and said, this is not true. If it is, if you can prove that I took money from Palette Management, I will shut down my account. And I don't know if we want to watch it, but he used a loophole here because it was Palette Media. So they're very smart in the way that they deliver these responses, right? They're within their contractual obligation to make sure that they don't out their funders, but that they say we are independent and they're just not.
Yeah. Speaking of contractual obligation, I made this what I found to be a hilarious tweet because to that response video that Olivia gave. And I said, the funny thing about all of this dark money drama is that if Taylor's reporting is accurate, Olivia is contractually obligated by Corus and by the 1630 Fund to say exactly this, to deny everything, right? Because Taylor said, hey, this is has to be in secret. So you, if you reveal that you're working with us, we will kick you out. So by definition, then she has to say, oh, yeah, yeah, no, we're not a part of this.
And who wants to lose $8,000 a month?
And Olivia responded to my tweet by saying, she says, this is not true. Don't put yourself in the same position as Taylor, or don't put yourself in the same position Taylor did by telling lies on the internet. That's an expensive lesson for some people to learn.
Why? They're going to try to sue you like Cash Patel's.
But if you look at these numbers, okay, she has 270,000 impressions, 66 likes, because LJ just liked it. And mine has only 141, the original response, 141 impressions, or 141,000 impressions with almost 5,000. So you got 66 likes.
Well, because that is really the sign of what? A sponsored paid for post.
Yes.
And a response.
Speaking of sponsored paid for posts, this one you'll find hilarious. I don't know if you saw this, but immediately after this came out, both Aaron Parnas and David Pakman, they're two big DNC people, put out almost the exact same response saying, because of a recent Wired hit piece that has now been debunked, by the way, it hasn't been debunked, misinformation spread like wildfire and several people decided to unsubscribe from my Substack. This is what the author wanted despite publishing a false article. Please consider subscribing to my work today. And then David Pakman said, after a recent Wired hit piece, now fully debunked, which is, once again, it's not.
False claims instead of misinformation.
False claims started circulating, and sadly, some people chose to unsubscribe from my website, membership, Substack, or unfollowed on YouTube. That is the exact outcome the author was hoping for when they put out a misleading and inaccurate article. If you want to support what I do, please consider subscribing. These two are almost cut and paste, identical messages.
You want to know what bugs me about this? It's the same thing with the body double. Do better.
Do better.
Right? Like, if you're trying to hide something, right?
You're being accused of spreading propaganda, and then
you are going to post the exact same response. You're going to leave a silly putty dent in the forehead. Like, we need these people to do better at the cover-up. It's really pathetic.
It is pathetic. And by the way, I mean, I have my disagreements with Taylor Lorenz on some issues that she's had in the past, especially like the COVID stuff.
Yeah.
But I do find her quite courageous because she kicks the beehive in all different directions, right? She's called out by the right. She's now being called out by the left. So she's just kind of doing her thing.
I also want to, you know, just shout her out. You introduced me to her at VidCon. Very nice. And, you know, this is something that is happening. And all of these influencers can say that it's misinformation all they want. But we know it's happening, and kudos to her for making it a big story, because more people should know that just because they're influencers or they're independent, they're still being bought and paid for. And so you can't trust the information that they're giving you. And that really is the whole, I think, important part of the story.
Absolutely. And to that point, nobody, none of these creators, as far as I'm concerned, or as far as I know, have filed any kind of lawsuit. Right. They're not saying that this is defamation, because it's not defamation, because it seems to be true what is going on here. And the second thing is, I think if you want to spread DNC propaganda, you should absolutely get paid to spread DNC propaganda. Why are you doing it for free? Right. Why would you do it for free?
Right.
Right. If you want to spread that shit, you should get paid for it. There's nothing wrong with that. The only thing wrong with it is not being honest about it.
Right. And talking about getting paid
It's like somebody working at CNN saying CNN doesn't tell me what to say. That's absolutely false. Your employer absolutely tells you what to say. And there's nothing wrong with being employed at a company. You just have to say, yes, I work for CNN, so they're telling me what to do.
Of course. Of course. And that's exactly what's happening with the comedians in Saudi Arabia.
This one is interesting because they're being kind of called out for doing shows or doing a big comedy festival in Saudi Arabia.
Coming up, right? So there's a big show coming up.
Yes, on September 26th. I'm not promoting or anything, but the Riyadh Comedy Festival. It is an absolutely star-studded lineup, right? It has Andrew Schultz, Aziz Ansari, Andrew Santino, Bobby Lee, Bill Burr,
Dave Chappelle,
Chris DeSfano, Chris Tucker, Gabriel Iglesias, Hannibal Buress. I mean, I can keep going on and on. Whitney Cummings, Tom Segura.
Tim Dillon, right?
Tim Dillon, Russell Peters, Louis C.K., Mark Norman. I mean, this is an A++ lineup here.
Yeah,
right. And some people are saying, how could you go there? How could you take this blood money, right? Because MBS is executing people on the daily. They killed that reporter a few years ago, Jamal Khashoggi. How could you be taking all of this blood money, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe there's a point there, but also, don't we kill a lot of people here in the United States?
I like Tim Dillon's response to it because he's just open about it.
Yeah.
And he's just...
Yeah, before we get there, I just want to say, okay, so there has been reporting from Deadline, right, saying that, hey, there are some stipulations about going over there, and they're saying that Saudi Arabia is known for limiting freedom of speech and expression when it comes to the arts, typically dictating on the offer sheet per multiple agents what can and cannot be said on topics like religion, sex, and the Saudi royal family. And this is where my issue with the comedians is like, you're supposed to punch everybody. So now you're taking...
Not in Saudi Arabia.
Not in Saudi Arabia. Now you're taking money. And this is where we drift into now. I think comedians, more so than ever before, are like in the mainstream. They're much more connected and close to power than they ever were before in the past.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they used to be kind of fringe people. They're at the CD comedy clubs. They're telling their jokes. And now it's like mainstream, right? You have comedians going to the inauguration of presidents. They're getting paid big money to do shows. They're selling out stadiums. That's, I think, kind of a new phenomenon.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I remember like HBO specials when I was in junior high.
But HBO is not, HBO at that time was like edgy.
Yeah.
Right? HBO was like doing all the stuff that you couldn't air on regular television.
Yeah. But this is all a part of Saudi Arabia's 2030 agenda so that they're becoming a tourist destination for the world. They want to have people come travel there and visit. So this is the prince's way of trying to appeal to the masses so that they're not just relying on oil money for the country's income, right? And so it's going to be interesting to see how this goes, what jokes they tell, what they're not allowed to tell, because the comedians and any sort of actor that goes there that does a show, they're basically protected. But then you have to wonder if somebody does say something off color like Dave Chappelle, and then a civilian is in the street repeating that, are they going to get killed like or thrown in jail, or how is this going to really shake out? I don't know.
Yeah, let's play Tim Dillon's response, because find that to be freaking hilarious.
Now, people might say to me, hey, you're coming out and saying you're doing the Saudi thing for money. They're paying you a lot of money. I'm not going to tell you how much they're paying me. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how much they're paying me. $375,000 for one show. Now, a lot of other people are getting $1.6 million. That's not me. I'm not in that bracket. But they're giving me $375,000. Others are getting $150,000. Why are they doing it? Here's the point. Okay? I am doing this because they're paying me a large sum of money. They're paying me enough money to look the other way. Do you understand? Israel gave none of us any money and expected we were all going to just defend them. For what? For no money? For $0? The threat that I won't get a sitcom on ABC Family? I'm supposed to go out and defend this genocide because maybe I won't be on ABC. I won't get to play a gym teacher on a network that won't be in business. And I'm supposed to care about that? Who gives a fuck? Where's the money, you bum?
No, and this is what I think that Aaron and Olivia should have done.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I would respect them so much more if they're like, yeah, I'm turning the other cheek, and I'm not going to talk about that because I'm getting paid $8,000 a month. Where's the money, Republican bums? Like, give me the money. You know what I mean? Like, that would be so much more honest. I can actually say, okay, yeah, you're running a business. You're getting paid $370,000. You know Dave Chappelle is in the $1.6 million range. Kevin Hart.
I would like a million bucks to do almost two sets.
Almost two.
Which is an insane amount of money. By the way, I actually don't think this will help the image of Saudi Arabia at all.
Okay, why?
Why would it, like, why would anybody think differently of their country just because a few comedians went over there to do a show?
Well, it's going to depend on the content that they allow. I guess if you're in such a censorship state, even for the people attending, if the prince is kind of loosening the restrictions of freedom,
well, maybe
of speech
within their country,
bit,
but they're saying yeah, it's going to rehabilitate their international reputation.
I think it's supposed to like help brand them.
Because Israel should be bringing these people over there right now. I don't know. I don't. The thing is, I don't think it works because people can see, oh, this is exactly what you're doing. You're just paying people to go over there to rehabilitate, but we know exactly what's going on. So why would it? It doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean,
so it's like, why not take the money? It's a comedian to take the money and do one show and then say peace, which is what some people say. I think Mark Norman said that. He's like, yeah, I'm doing it for the money and I'm out of there.
Yeah. I mean, I would be kind of worried about going over there and, you know, maybe skirting the line a little too close. And then it's like, you ain't coming back, you know?
Which is fine. You've made, I mean, 1.6. That's good. The one show, 1.6. And ever, I mean, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Multiple 1.6s. And this is where a similar thing happened in the PGA Tour a couple years ago. I don't know if you followed this story, where Saudi Arabia created this rival golf league called Live Golf. And they're paying players exorbitant. They're talking about like $800 million contracts. I think Tiger Woods was offered $1 billion. He didn't take it. Over $1 billion to play in this Saudi golf tournament.
Oh my gosh.
And the PGA Tour started freaking out and saying, no, you guys can't do this. Like, you're contractually obligated to play for the PGA Tour. If you go over there, we're going to ban you from the PGA Tour.
Well, that's why he didn't do it, right?
Because no, that's not. I think he didn't need the money. I think Tiger Woods doesn't need the money. But Phil Mickelson took it. He took $800 million to go over there.
Dang.
And a bunch of other players took money.
And was Phil allowed to play PGA after that?
No. So they banned all of these people from playing the PGA Tour. Because what would have happened if they didn't do that? And then they pulled out the 9 of 11 families to say, hey, you guys are taking blood money. They dragged them out to this press conference to say, no. These people, to shame these golfers for taking the Saudi money because of 9/11 or whatever. And what would have happened was these golfers would have went over there, played a few tournaments, made a
billion dollars
or whatever, made 50. I mean, some, like, I would say mediocre players were getting paid like 50, 60 million bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. To go and play a few tournaments. And so what happened after that was, what would have happened after that was they would have played the tournaments and come back to the PGA Tour, because nobody cares about these tournaments because they're not historical. Like, people want to play on the PGA Tour because there's tournaments that have legacy and they want to, you know, win big championships. This is just some made up exhibition type of stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't really care. But what happened is they banned all these players. So now what's happened is the other golf league is now legitimate because these players can't go back to the PGA Tour. So now they're building something actually kind of cool where they have teams and they have all these like cool competitions and they're making golf fun. It's like when you go to these events, it's like, you know, a rock concert. They're playing music during the golf tournament, which, you know, golf is like historically very quiet. You have to.
Yeah. Unless you're at like the Phoenix.
Open. Yeah. Yeah. Unless that's the only one, but there you have to do the golf clap, things like that. Now it's like this fun rock and roll type of thing. And so they're actually just building something separate because the players can't go back. So what would have happened is the Saudis would have wasted billions of dollars for some players. And then they would have just gone back to the PGA Tour. But now because the PGA Tour banned them, they can't go back. And now what's happened, because the PGA Tour has gotten so weak, they're now merging with the Saudi golf.
No.
Yes. Now they're basically, the Saudis now essentially control the PGA Tour in some ways because they hemorrhage so many players that now the PGA Tour is like struggling.
It sounds like the prince was smart in that decision.
No, I think the PGA Tour is dumb in their decision to ban these players.
Well,
from coming back.
It'll be interesting to see the way that this...
So they're going to refold, I guess, at some point into one league.
That is crazy. I had no idea. I don't follow golf.
Yeah.
So. But I do know that Phil Mickelson is a little bit older.
Yeah.
Right? And so if I were him, I'd do the same thing.
Oh, yeah. He's on a tail. He's 45.
On the end
of
my career. You know what I mean? I'm going to go over. I'm going to make 800. And now look at him. Now he's coming back.
Well, now he's doing YouTube, you know, videos and stuff like that. But that's my point is, I don't think this whole thing even does anything if you just let it happen. Like, yes, let these comedians make their money and they'll come back to, because you know what? you still want to perform in the U.S., right? Imagine if the U.S. government is like, oh, you can't perform if any, and then they're like, okay, maybe Riyadh will be like the comedy mecca of the world going forward.
Right, the new mothership.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what's going on. Just let them do their thing and they'll come back, because the legacy, you can't buy legacy, you know?
No,
you can't buy like the L.A. comedy scene. It's just L.A. comedy scene is always going to be the L.A. comedy scene, or New York comedy scene. That's why Austin, some of the comedians are still like, I don't know about that, because it's one comedy club. This doesn't have the legacy. I'd rather still make it in L.A. or New York if I can. Yeah,
for sure. So, no, it'll be interesting. You know, the United States is the leader in culture for the world. And so, and trends. Like, when TikTok went dark for 24 hours, there were people around the world celebrating. And then the whole other side was saying, it was so boring without the Americans. Like, we're the reality TV show for the rest of the world. They are doing our dances. They're doing our trends. So I'm sure the people in Saudi Arabia are pumped up that these comedians are doing a show there.
Yeah. So in essence, I support them. Go get your bag.
For sure. I mean, I have no reason to be against it.
Not that. Well, so if the DNC or the RNC came and said, hey, we're going to give you some money, pretty big money.
How much?
No, but I mean, that's why we built the show the way we've built it, is because we want to be able to say whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you'll know there will be signs if we're paid.
There will be signs. And I will just say it.
I might get my septum pierced.
Oh, my God.
I crack myself up.
All right. So this is, I mean, so...
I don't know,
now we're gonna turn to quite another serious story here. It's the Gaza Freedom Flotilla.
Oh, okay, I didn't know which we were doing next. Yes. Yeah.
So this is quite the turn. Now we're talking a serious situation, because there is legitimately starvation going on in Gaza.
Yes.
Right. I mean, everybody's talked about it.
100%.
Like the UN said it, Amnesty International, they all deem, hey, there's a famine going on and it's created by Israel.
100%.
Even though Israel says, no, all the aid trucks are going in, except Hamas is just stealing all the food.
Right.
I was like, there's not enough Hamas to eat all the food. Like, what is happening?
Well, I just find it interesting that they can, like, over the weekend, I believe, bomb Yemen.
Yeah.
Take out their prime minister. And their whole entire cabinet. But you can't find a way to get food to these people?
Well, it's not about finding a way. It's about them not wanting. The purpose is to starve these people.
That's my point, is that if you're able to be so precise with your technology, you don't really have an excuse for these people starving. That's my point.
Yes. Right? So that's why citizens now have to do the thing and sail on these boats, these rickety sailboats, and
I mean, the idea
dinghies
that if Greta Thunberg is on a rickety sailboat, it's because she wants that look.
Well, that's what her job. I mean, she is an activist, so she picks issues that she has aligned with, and
she's funded by George Soros NGOs.
Is she still funded by George Soros NGOs? I definitely believe with the climate stuff.
If you were once, I'm sure there's dark money like the DNC people, right? You're getting something under.
Well, because she has no job. Right.
And how does she, right.
She doesn't work.
Yet she's.
But I'm supportive of what she's doing, but I'm just saying the reality is that somebody's funding these causes.
So, okay. So what's happening is she has gathered a group of influencers and activists. On
I don't think she's. So it's the Global Samud Flotilla to Gaza. So this is more than 50 ships with representation from at least 44 countries heading over to Gaza to challenge Israel's blockade and deliver urgently needed humanitarian aid. Collectively, they will form the largest coordinated civilian flotilla in history. So they've set sail.
And what's a flotilla?
A flotilla? I don't know the exact definition. How I see it is like it's like a group of ships that are I don't know what you call it, but an army of ships. A flotilla, what is the definition? Let's look it up, right?
Flotilla, tortilla.
Let's learn some things today. What is the definition? It's a fleet of ships. That's the word I was looking
Got
for.
It.
Fleet. A fleet of ships. Heading over there, August 31st, setting sail from Barcelona, and it's going to take them supposedly 7 to 8 days to reach. They've apparently hit a little bit of a snag, which our Barstool journalist Jack Mack called out on Twitter, or on Instagram, sorry. And let's take a listen to this video.
Yesterday, Greta announced that she was sailing back to Gaza. You may remember about a month or so ago, she set sail to Gaza. She was intercepted by the IDF. They gave her some bread and then returned her back to wherever she lives. Yesterday, she said in the press conference before she set sail, the story is also about a global uprising, about how people are stepping up when our governments fail to do so. But in a wild turn of events, last night, Greta's ship only sailed 20 miles off the coast and then had to turn back around. So it's already over. It lasted like an hour. She's already back on land.
So apparently, he's getting absolutely killed in the comments here, by the way, in this video. Because, okay. I mean, yes, I think he's like a comedian kind of guy. So he's like making light. I don't have a problem with that necessarily. But people are taking issue with like, hey, what you're making fun of. I think it's totally fine to make fun of. Because Greta is like kind of ripe for comedy, right? Just maybe her look, her personality, the way she speaks, right? You've made fun of her before.
Well, I just think it's interesting the things that she stands up for and the things that she doesn't. She really heavily aligns herself with the WEF agenda, which makes me very skeptical of her.
But this one, this issue is not with the globalist agenda.
You were saying I've made fun of her in the past, so I was explaining why.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Like, no, in the past, I would agree, but I think this one steps outside of that, you know, the heavily establishment.
No, I think
funded.
What she's trying to do is honorable and it's great. I just wonder also why you're going to film the whole thing, right? People say, like, when you give to charity and then you, like, make a post or a picture of it, like, I wrote a check for 50.
Well, this one, they're filming the whole thing because they want to bring awareness of the issue, right? They're trying to bring awareness to say, hey, Israel is starving a population.
Yes.
And it's taking us citizens going there by boat on these people who are volunteering their old boats to go over there because they're not getting the proper aid, right? You see these videos of, like, these aid drops from, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're, like, literally killing people
in
these
so aid.
It's so dumb. I don't know, for the lack of a better word, but it's like these drops of like, I don't know, of medicine or whatever, and it like smashes on some child's head, and now you've killed a few people in trying to deliver aid because they're blocking all the land routes in from Israel, from Egypt. Obviously, Israel's saying that, oh, it's Hamas. Hamas is blocking and they're stealing all the food.
Yeah.
So they're I think there is a good reason to film this because they want people to know. They want people on social media to say, hey, what's going on over here? Why are there 50 ships going over there?
Yeah. And when are they expected to make land?
I think in 7 or 8 days, you can play G12. This is an update after to explain why they're turning back around.
Yusuf and I'm going to Gaza. We were leaving Barcelona with 24 vessels. We are now down to 20. To repeat, we left Barcelona with 24 vessels. We are now down to 20. We endured a heavy storm overnight. Some of the ships had to turn around and head back to port. Other ones were barely able to make it out of the port. Some of them will try and repair and they'll join us in the journey. But it's not looking like the weather conditions are improving anytime soon.
I mean, would you be on? I mean, that's, I mean, I commend all these people for doing this because this is, that doesn't seem that fun. It doesn't seem like, oh, it's a nice photo op. It seems kind of.
This is
harrowing.
A step up from cruise ships for me because cruise ships are just disgusting.
Would you rather do this?
I'm not really a boat, you know, person. Also, I mean, it's amazing what these people are doing, right? They're risking their lives. They are sailing into enemy territory. They're probably going to get arrested and go to jail. Who knows what's going to happen to these people? That's the reality of it. I do think that these people are starving, the children are dying, and that we do need to get food there. So we'll see what happens. You know, it's like,
yeah,
Israel bombed the hospital on live TV. So
to take out a camera, they said.
Yeah, to take out a camera.
Hamas camera.
Who knows what they're going to do to these people? They literally are risking their lives.
Right, and that's why you need high-profile people like her to go to say you can't just bomb. Because imagine if it's unnamed people. They would just bomb the ship and it would be over.
Which is why I'm not getting on the ship. They'd be like, who? No.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, because they know that if they actually kill a few of these people, there's going to be huge international backlash.
Yeah, and when you look at the coastline. Have you seen that video of what Gaza's coastline looked like before and after? I honestly had to ask Grok.
Yeah, if these are real.
Is this AI?
Yeah.
And no, it's not. It's a BBC footage side by side. And it is just so, so shocking and sad and horrible. And what's going on there is absolutely horrible, you know? That's just it. And so I hope that they can get food there, but I don't know if they're going to be successful.
I mean, even if they did get some food there, it's not enough to feed the entire, you know, so population, the 1.5 million people who are there. And to me, you can't argue anything other than they are trying to just starve these people out. They're trying to decimate this population in whichever way they can, right? With those bombs, basically carpet bombing everything, right? Because, you know, like you said, these guys have the best weapons technology.
They can blow up certain pagers.
Yeah. They can blow up pagers. They literally can target one apartment building in Iran.
One floor. And in Yemen. They just did.
Yeah. So
you should be able to use that same technology and target a food drop in a safe area where people are going to get it, and Hamas would not be able to take the food.
Exactly.
If that's your story, then you should be able to do that.
And I think they've just gone too far. They're like, we just want this land. This is our land.
100%.
And we're going to do whatever it takes. But then the thing is, like, after that, can you even live there? Like, imagine, I mean, like the LA fires, right? The toxins and all that shit in the Palisades and in Altadena.
Well, you have the real estate agents.
Who's going to want to go here?
The investors are buying up that land, right? They're getting a fire sale.
But would you want to go there? Like, imagine, would you take your family? Oh, we're going to go to a nice Mediterranean resort in Gaza, or what was once Gaza. Now it's like, oh, the ghost of like dead Palestinians are like underneath your feet. Like, would you even want to take your family there?
No, but you know, there's people that go visit, you know, places that have been bombed before. Like, so I don't know.
Maybe during
Japan in World War II.
Okay. Yes. That's not necessarily
the same, right?
It's not like
a genocide going on.
Right.
But it's still evil and it still killed a bunch of people.
It's like, for example, the US didn't bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki because we wanted to build resorts there, right? They're literally saying, hey, we're gonna clear it out and we're gonna develop like this the best resorts
and
videos. Yeah. No, so it's like, what's happening here?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
So I think that's why creators like Jack, I like him, to be honest, because I think he's hilarious.
Yeah, of course.
That's why you're getting this pushback, because it's like, this is like a big issue in terms of like, where are you able to like think independently, or are you still like saying, hey, I'm going to toe the line. I don't want to talk too much about this issue because like Tim Dillon said, you could not get a job at ABC Family because there are some things that you might lose your management representation. You might lose a few jobs here and there, but do you want to like be silent about it?
Right.
That's the big question. So that's why, you know, we're going to continue to build this show independently of money from
all of this. Sorry to cut you off. Continue.
No, go
ahead. I was just going to say, do you think like there's a lot of weight to all of the things we've been talking about?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And social media has given us a window that we never had before in history, right? Like, I don't necessarily think that 50 years ago there wasn't as much evil going on. I think now everybody just has a phone in their hand. Mm. It's the same reason why I think aliens have been here for 50 years, but now everybody has a phone in their hand and they're catching all these UFOs, right?
No, that's true. 100%
true. It's that type of a thing. And so our kids and young adults and people in general in all age groups negatively being affected by this access to information?
Possibly. I mean, not possibly, probably.
Yes. And so there's a sex recession going on in the United States,
yes.
Right? People are not having sex, and you have to wonder why that is.
Yeah, let's take a look at some of the stats here, because this is fascinating what's going on. And actually, to tie it back to the issue of activism, you know who Scott Galloway is? He's a professor at New York University. He's like one of the, he's pretty big in terms of he's a big media talking head guy.
Okay.
And he said that people are out there marching for Palestine because they're not having sex. He's like, college students need to just go and have sex. Which I don't know if I agree with that, but the numbers certainly are down. So it's from 1990, 55% of adults 18 to 64 say they were having sex weekly or more. Now it's down to 37%.
Yeah, it's a big drop. And I find the timeline interesting because 1990 is really when technology started to be introduced, right? Computers in school.
Well, the big drop, if you see the big drop right there, it's right before 2010. That's when social media hit.
Right.
And that's the numbers are still above 50% at that point. And all of a sudden now
before
in the last
social media, you still had
You had AOL, you had text messaging.
And these things that did keep you on your phones, right?
Right.
And you could even bring in like video games to this and all different type of screens.
Yes. But so, then the social media really, I think, kicked into high gear. Because before that, it was still just, there wasn't this virality to it. There was still, it's just information on the internet. And with social media becoming like an algorithmic engine, now everybody's seeing the same thing. It's being pushed to you and you can have posts go viral. Versus before, it was just like, oh, I have to go to this random website that looks like some text-based thing. And it wasn't as in your face about it, mm-hmm. right? Because and before that, too, with the social media, everybody, you know, even on AIM, AOL Instant Messenger, you're just talking to your friends. You're not being judged by people you don't know, right?
Yeah.
With social media, you're posting stuff online. You're getting comments from whoever the fuck's out there.
Yeah, 100%.
And also, people are just communicating more online. That's like their way of communication.
Well, people are fake. People are super fake online. And when you look at the intimacy thing, it's how are people connecting now, right? On dating apps, online, and you and I even know this, right? We're not even in the younger generation, but we're in a unique time where technology was introduced. We saw both, right?
Yeah.
We saw both worlds. And we know, just based on people that we know, right?
Yeah.
You see pictures and you see this happy family and we're celebrating our anniversary and it's Christmas and it's the picket white fence and they're using face filters and, right? And so it's giving this idea that people's lives are perfect and then other people look at this and they probably feel inadequate, right? I'm not good enough. So why am I even going to get out there? I'm not as good as Ashley or Christine or, you know, whoever it is. And you know, depression rates are at an all-time high. You have suicide rates specifically for girls with technology at an all-time high, but it's also hard to differentiate really what is the reason because you also have chronic illness at an all-time high. You have autoimmune at an all-time high, right?
Yeah.
We have a health epidemic in this country as well. And I think you could really fit technology into that health epidemic as saying screen time is not healthy for you, just like processed foods are not healthy for you. And how do we fix this? I don't know. But
well, this is the study. This is what the study said. This is the Institute for Family Studies. And what they're saying is that it's no surprise that this period is marked by an increase in sexlessness, more time devoted to smartphones, social media, pornography. That's a big one. And gaming meant that young adults had fewer opportunities to develop the social skills needed to form relationships and spent less time in social settings such as parties that would facilitate romantic relationships. The negative consequence of gaming may also extend to young men's declining participation in the workforce, which reduces their appeal on the mating market. So it's a confluence of many different things happening at the same time, I think. And this is probably not a great direction for society because you were talking about when you were going to school, you're not spending time on social media. You're going out to these parties.
Don't single me out. When we were
I was chill.
Oh, yes. That's hilarious. No, but it's true, right? Like, I would go home from school in fifth grade and, like, everybody in the neighborhood.
No, I was talking about college, fifth grade.
Oh, I thought you were talking about technology in general.
I'm talking about your
partying at U of A.
Yeah, like that's
like, yeah.
Because I feel like nowadays college students are not in the same, like that's not what they're doing anymore as much. It's like more like online based.
But going back to what I was going to say, fifth grade is like you would come home from school and you would go play in the street with your neighbors.
Yeah.
You'd play flag football. You'd play, you know, street hockey.
Yeah.
You'd play baseball. You'd play butts up against the garage, handball. I don't know.
And we're not saying these people are having sex. Like fifth graders shouldn't be having sex.
No. I'm just saying, though, that even at a young age now, kids are going home. They're not with their friends. And even if they're going to hang out at their friends' houses, you know what they do? They sit in the room side by side texting.
Yeah.
And a lot of couples, because you look at this chart, it's not just the younger generation. When you look at the 18 to 64-year-olds, it's across the board.
It's across the board.
And you also hear these stories of, you know, couples sitting in bed side by side doing social media.
Yeah, this is
in
E10.
Their older age as well.
Yeah, E10 here. Because you have still married couples. If you compare it between, this is between 1996 and 2008 versus 2010 and 2024, married couples are also faced with a sex recession.
Yeah.
Because before it's like, I think it's all about things to do. Now it's like we're just doing things where we're on our phones or we're watching Netflix. We're not chilling.
Yeah, but when
and we're not
younger,
chilling.
That is a thing to do, right? Yeah. Like that's what you want to do. So
this is, I think this is overall bad. This is what the study kind of concludes, is like the findings in this IFS research brief matter because regular sex is linked to better health, higher quality marriages, and greater happiness. We are, as Aristotle noted, social animals, real embodied creatures who flourish from real-world interactions with others. And even though many of us are tempted nowadays to live out the lion's share of our lives, including our sexual lives, in the virtual world, the truth is that we thrive when we have regular opportunities to spend time with other human beings physically. That's why America should be just as concerned about the sex recession as any other.
100%. And, you know, there's also the facts that people are not having as many children, and there's a lot that this affects.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. And I think these are the types of issues
population
that we have to focus on and get back to these core issues of like, hey, how do we make this country healthier versus more profitable? How do we sell off parts of this country?
Sell off parts of this country.
Well, yeah, that's what we're doing. We're literally selling. I mean, we sold off our manufacturing base over the last 20 years, right, to other countries. I'm talking about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, we need to focus on building, like, a robust country because when I travel, that's what I'm seeing is, like, they're investing in their own people to say, how do we get stronger, healthier, have more robust, economies within our own borders versus here all the companies that are domiciled in the United States. It's like, oh, how do we make more profit? Oh, we can do that by hiring some Indian dude or some Filipino person to do our call center, kind of thing.
I do hope, though, that with this sex recession and the depression and the screen time and all of that, that the pendulum swings back a little bit, right? Because, like, when we were growing up, our parents really didn't know. It was the first time it was introduced. Now, our generation is having kids, and we know all about this type of stuff and the harms of screen time and the fake world that exists online. So I have a lot of friends that are like, I'm not letting my kids do screen time until they're 10 or 12. And now you're starting to see that restriction, where I think the generation after us, my sister's generation, who's 10 years younger, that's not millennial, that's Gen Z. I think that they really got the worst of it because it was like, oh, you're in kindergarten, you get a 5-button phone. Oh, you're here. Like, right? They had everything so young.
Yeah.
You have these 12-year-olds dressing up and learning to put on makeup and contour their face like they're 20. And so hopefully now that our generation that's familiar with this technology is having kids, you're going to have a little bit more onus on what they're, looking at. That's my only hope.
Yeah. Well,
because obviously, you want them to be up with the times, right? But you also want to protect their mental health.
100%.
And I think talking about it is really important because the more the conversation is out there, the more people will think about it. And then parents can hopefully make better decisions for their kids. And like I said, there is a balance with screen time, right? Because, you look at China and the way that they're teaching their kids in the classroom to be so technologically advanced, you don't want to fall behind. But then they also have
the physical exercise stuff.
Well, I was going to say they also have controls on their social medias and different things where they're not allowed to watch certain material or they're not allowed to be on their phones past certain times. And so they're doing both, right? They're limiting the screen time while also making sure they're educated in the future.
Right, which I'm not for. I'm not for these kinds of authoritarian type of moves. I'm more for just having the right incentives in place so people would naturally want to do those things.
Well, in some ways, I think it's good, right? Like, I think there should be safeguards on phones for kids at certain ages to not be able to access any porn sites.
Okay, but then that leads to the UK situation where they're using this as an excuse to bring about authoritarian.
You leave it in the parents' hands.
Okay, you leave it in the parents' hands.
Right? And the parents are able to set those guardrails, right? If it's my kids, I would never want my kid to be exposed to porn at age 9. Right.
Right. So then you want to be able to go on their device and set the thing, not the government coming in and say, we're going to require you to put in an ID if you want to come to this website.
Right. Exactly. So I think there's, you know.
Yeah. So let us know what you think.
Yes. About all of this down below.
There you go. I think that's all we have for this week. We appreciate everybody for being with us today.
100%. Stella, Kevin Howard. I am going to message you with some mock-ups of some merch. James and I have not gotten it out to you because we are changing our logo. We have like a rebrand coming. It's very exciting, but we are going to get you some really cool stuff for being founding fathers. We're so appreciative of you. We hope you guys loved the episode, and let us know if you think that was a body double.
I'll see you next week. Oh, yeah. By the way, next week we have a very special guest coming on, Jimmy Dore.
Woo!
And so for the Patreon members, for the founding fathers, you get special early access to that interview. So if you want to see that before everybody else, go sign up on our Patreon. And if not, you know, for the regular people, we still want to make all this information accessible. So that'll be on YouTube later on.
And if you're one of the people that wants to see a cockroach on my chair mid-interview, you could just sign up for that because that happens in the interview. So,
all right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate everybody. Sign up YouTube, subscribe. Apple, Spotify. We'll see you next week.
Bye.